Hello and welcome to another, I was going to say Premier League preview podcast exclusively here on Patreon for you guys, but well, we're not going to be doing any previewing because the Premier League game that we were supposed to play tomorrow is now off, so we might do a little bit of reviewing. And with me, as always, is Lewis Ambrose. Lewis, happy Christmas, etc., etc. Did you have a nice festive time?
I've had a festive time, yeah, festive enough.
Enough.
It's always a little bit more festive when Arsenal add the icing on the cake on Boxing Day as well.
So that was it icing, or was it the marzipan, or was it the... Which bit do you think it was?
I don't really like marzipan. I'm not a big fan of marzipan.
Right.
So I'm going to stick with icing.
Okay.
Anyone else can call it whatever they like. I think we all enjoyed it equally.
Yeah, whatever extra addition you would like on a cake, whether it's more icing, marzipan, whipped cream, whatever it might be. Hang on. I've got one. Thanks very much. I was just being offered a beer there, but I'd already come prepared to this particular recording, so it's fine. So look, what I will say is that given that we're going to talk about that game against Norwich, for Patreon members, there might be a little bit of crossover in the discussion between, what we do here and what I'm going to do tomorrow with James, because the whole Wolves postponement thing has fucked up our podcast schedule, because we thought we'd be talking a little bit about Norwich, preview Wolves, and then myself and James are going to talk about the Norwich and the Wolves game, but the Wolves game is off. Here's an interesting comment. I'm not sure how true this is, but we got a comment on Arseblog News, and it says... As a Wolves fan, the decision to postpone is ridiculous, not because of COVID. Of the two players affected, one is a long-term injury and the other has played about 10 minutes this season, so that has nothing to do with it. I didn't know Wolves only had two players out. We had four for the Norwich game. He said the problem is a small squad with which injuries is down to around 11 fit first team players. Wolves fans have complained to the club on numerous occasions that we need more players, and now it has come to this. Sorry Arsenal fans about the postponement, and I have to agree, Wolves should be docked 3 points as a warning to other clubs that having a small squad is no excuse for postponing games.
That feels a hell of a lot like a West Brom fan posing as a Wolves fan to me.
It does a little bit, but it still feeds into my slight conspiracy brain, which I'm not saying I activate a great deal, but something like this, I feel like I want to believe it.
Should you be allowed, that's the big question, right? Should you be allowed to have games postponed because of injuries as well?
And I know no.
That we obviously played Leeds last week and they had like 9 players missing, was it, from injury? And then they didn't play Liverpool this week because then they had a couple of coronavirus cases as well. Mm. But like, if you just had 15 injuries and no one was fit, wouldn't the Premier League just make you play your under-19s?
Well, that's exactly it, yeah.
So why is that not... obviously, I understand if there's, like, 10 coronavirus... Like, a big outbreak or something.
Of course,
and then they don't want
it
to spread. And that makes loads of sense. This idea that a combination of infections and injuries means that you don't have 13 players, it's like, well, yeah, then use the reserves or use the under-19s then. Sort of where I stand on it. And then if you drop points because of it, well... Tough. I found that weird. And Crystal Palace had loads, or had a few at least, and then still played Tottenham on Boxing Day.
And their manager.
And Patrick Vieira wasn't there, yeah.
I mean, that to me and feels like... Yeah, what do you think of that? I mean, what do you think of, like...
If we want to get into conspiracies anyway, I was wondering, because obviously if you look at the league table, Spurs are more games behind than anyone else. And I was thinking... that their game wasn't postponed, possibly because the Premier League were worried that if they, in particular, have any more games postponed, then they're sort of fucked trying to fit in their games before the end of the season.
I think that Spurs have been quite fortunate. There's no question about it. But I'm really interested in the idea of, a game going ahead when the manager is... not available because of something like COVID. Like, I know they have staff. I know they have, assistants and coaches and people who can take charge and everything else. But to me, that feels just slightly wrong. Like, there are reasons why sometimes a manager misses a game, you know, family issues, bereavements, things like that, illness, whatever it might be, and the games go ahead. But I don't know, I just feel like a team is at something of a disadvantage when their manager, even if he's drawn up a big game plan, you know, has to miss the game because of COVID and self-isolation. And it was, you know, true of Steven Gerrard as well. He's missed a couple, or will miss a couple of Aston Villa games. You know, it doesn't take much for a manager's standing to go from, you know, good to get this guy out of here, you know? As we know.
Or vice versa, I was about to say. Yeah. As we've sort of probably experienced the last... 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Mm. It can go so quickly in one or the other directions. Yeah, but before I think Newcastle played twice under Eddie Howe before we played them, I think. But our game was the first one where he was actually on the touchline. And yeah, I mean, you're talking about a team that's almost certainly or very likely to get relegated this season, and then to have to play two or three games without a manager actually there or on the training ground as well, obviously, which would be the case for Vieira and Gerrard now, that Villa and Palace will have to play games without even having them two on the training ground in between matches.
Yeah.
It does seem a bit weird and a bit off, but I guess this situation is just sort of like that, right? Where things aren't fair and you just sort of have to swallow it and move on, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. And look, we had four players missing because of COVID for the Norwich game. Four of them players who could play at right back. Tomiyasu, Chambers, Cedric, and Ainsley Maitland-Niles. How much Ainsley Maitland-Niles' COVID case was a COVID case and more of a coronavirus? We'll have to wait and see. I apologize to everybody for that terrible, terrible pun. But of course, he has been linked with a move to Roma. Maybe that's something we can discuss on the Arscast Extra. But Ben White was the only change from the team that played Leeds. I think I asked you this last time. Where is your... or maybe I asked James, I can't remember. But the putting to the sword of bad teams, the... taking advantage of a team that has injuries and COVID cases, a team that is weakened, a team that's bottom of the table. Do you find it difficult to separate or analyze games like that when there is, you know, an expectation that you should go and really hammer these teams? And then when you go and do it, people are like, yeah, you should do that anyway. That's exactly what you should do. You know, you're not getting any credit for that because, you know, that's what you should do.
I am enjoying these wins as much as I possibly can. Mm. And I think, Norwich is an easier game than playing Man United or Tottenham or West Ham or whoever. But we still have to win them. And our problem, hasn't it been our problem for years? I mean, maybe you have asked me this, and maybe this was exactly my answer. Or maybe this is something that you said to James, and then I've talked about it with someone else and it was a different discussion. So sorry if we're just repeating a conversation all over again for someone.
It's but Christmas. Yeah, they're all drunk.
Well, yeah. I mean, we really could have just, you could have anyway, chopped up old episodes and sewn them together and no one even would have realised. We didn't even need to do this. I thought the West Ham win was really good. And then so what if Leeds have a load of players missing or Norwich have a load of players or Norwich are rubbish? Like, you still have to win those games. And I don't think for a few years now we have won those games and not consistently. So I am completely enjoying it. I think, you know, there's a difference between winning it and then being like, oh, we're going to win the league and we play Man City next week and we're going to batter them as well. And winning it and just sort of being able to say, yeah, that's really good. And maybe we're not going to finish fourth, or maybe we're not really, really good as a team yet, but that was still a good win. And you can only beat what's in front of you. And I think we've done that the last few weeks.
Yeah. And I think that when you talk about, you know, some of the games in which we've struggled, that we still have as a team, I think, to convince people that we're capable of doing better in games. And you don't have to look back too far. You know, the Man United game, that's, you know, we've talked about it, but it's a game we should not have lost, but we did. The Everton game, a game we should not have lost, but we did. Previous to that, there was a game against Liverpool, which, you know, was competitive for a little bit, but then it wasn't. And, you know, clearly there are still things for this team to improve on, to develop, to do better, etc., etc. You know, nobody is saying because we've beaten Norwich and Leeds that we're now the finished article. I think you can enjoy it, and you should enjoy it, and you should take all the good things from these games. But I also believe quite strongly that when it comes to the next big game, and maybe Man City is one which will disprove my point entirely, because I think they're slightly separate from this, in that I'm not sure what we can really do against Manchester City as good as we are. But when you're talking about playing a Manchester United in the state that they were in, when you're talking about playing an Everton again, when you know you can do what we did to Leeds and what we did to West Ham and what we did to Norwich, I think it just gives you a little bit more belief for those games. It's like, okay, we can win these when they've previously been a bit of a struggle, and it's not that we don't have to work hard, etc., etc., but when we go and play these other games, there is a little more self-confidence, and you can see that this is a team, and there are individuals in it we might talk about in a moment, who are certainly playing with a lot more confidence, with a lot more fluency, with more intent. And that just comes from playing in games like this, where you do things, they come off, there's end product, etc., etc., and you sort of build on that momentum. They're almost like building blocks.
Yeah, and everybody has to play these games though, right? Like, everybody drops points. Everybody has to play everybody twice. Like, Man City didn't beat Southampton at home, and Chelsea drew with Burnley and drew with, was it Everton recently, and lost to West Ham. And West Ham lost to Southampton yesterday on Boxing Day. So everybody has to play these games, and teams above us or around us in the league, it's not like they win every single one of those games. And the way that Arsenal played the last few seasons, especially, you know, you'd probably go back to Arsene Wenger's final season and then include everything since then. And maybe in, you know, some cases you'd even include seasons before then. Like, Norwich away is not a gimme. It's not automatically 3 points, and Southampton at home isn't automatically 3 points, even if they are way below us in the league table. And West Ham at home is definitely not, you know, the way they've played the last 12 months or so, is definitely not a game where you sort of expect, yeah, we're definitely going to win that one. So we have to win these matches, even, you know, no matter how easy they were. And we've had this a lot all season, right? We're halfway through the season now. We're fourth. We're on track for 70 points if we play exactly as we have so far. If sort of results repeat, 70 points is almost always good enough to get you into the Champions League. We're on track for, I mean, we've not been scoring. With the last few weeks, we've started scoring again. I think we're on track for the most goals we've had in the last three or four full seasons, even though it took us a while until we actually started regularly finding the net the last few weeks. So you've got to take each game as it comes. You've got to beat what's in front of you. And that's just what we're doing at the moment. It's not our fault that we're playing Norwich. Norwich are in the Premier League, so we've got to beat Norwich twice. And now we have, which is lovely. And as long as we keep doing that, if we take care of those games, the complaint under Arsene Wenger for all that time was that we won the easy games and then lost the tough games, and then we were, you know, not capable of competing for the league. But then he left, or his final season as well, the away form, we stopped winning the easy games too, and then we weren't in the Champions League anymore either. So that's where we want to be and where we want to get back to, firstly. And we're doing sort of the right thing. We're putting in the right performances that can get us there. So I think it's all, for me, it's only positive. And especially because it is coming with a sort of a very new look team as well. There's something that feels very fresh about it. Yeah. We're not watching Mustafi and Willian beat Norwich, but we're watching a bunch of guys who we all can see have huge potential and are only going to get better beat Norwich. And that's way more exciting.
Yeah. Look, I was going to ask you this because you watch these games. I don't know how much time you've had to rewatch things or to make notes. But leaving aside the very obvious difference in that Aubameyang hasn't been playing for the last couple of weeks. And in that time, we've beaten Southampton 3-0, West Ham 2-0, Leeds 4-1. There was a 5-1 in the EFL Cup and Norwich 5-0 yesterday. Is there anything tactically or organisationally that you have noticed in these performances that might explain some of the improved output from an attacking perspective and obviously the improved results?
Well, yeah, I'm hoping to have a little bit more. You know what it's like at Christmas, especially.
Yeah, of course.
So usually, for anyone who doesn't know, when I write like the tactics columns on Arseblog, then I'll watch a game twice. So you watch it live and then watch it sped up a second time, and sort of watch it and take a few notes and things like that as I'm watching it that second time. And generally, I think so. This sort of started, or the last bad game, or the last two bad games, and they were back to back, were Old Trafford and Everton. And I thought everything looked so static. And, you know, Gabriel Martinelli, that was when he actually came into the team for those first two games. But even then, when was the last time he was in a Premier League starting 11? This time last year, almost.
Well, he played the start of the season, didn't he?
No, right, yeah. The first two games of the season. But except for that, his last little run in the team would have been last winter. So Martinelli was a player who I think his natural attributes have changed a lot. The fact that he's always moving and he's always looking to stretch teams. He's always asking a question in behind the defence, which is something that I think we've really lacked. I think there's a mixture of things. I think the players, you know, this was before this game, was it the Leeds game? Last weekend, it was the fourth 11 in a row that was exactly the same. It was the first time that had happened in more than 6 years. And then obviously it was just the one change, Rob Holding coming in for Tomiyasu for Norwich yesterday. So I think these players have got used to each other, basically. There's so much more sort of movement, drive. Players have an idea, I think, of where each other are going to move, and then when each other moves there, where they themselves need to be in response to that. I think it's something that, who funnily enough, hasn't been in the lineup, but we improved so much last season when Emile Smith Rowe came in, because his movement, to me, is constantly balancing the movement of someone else. If someone else needs a bit of space on the ball, he'll run past them and drag a defender away. And if they need someone to combine with, he comes to them. And if, you know, if someone makes a run in behind, he comes short, and vice versa. For 12 months now, I think he's basically, and him and Bukayo Saka less so, Smith Rowe in particular, has been the only Arsenal player who's offered all of that. That sort of balancing movements to sort of glue the team together and create space for others or for himself, or to exploit space that someone else has created. And now I'm watching that front three or front four, but especially the three behind Lacazette. And I think they're all doing it. I think that it comes a little bit with just playing together and getting used to each other. I think it comes with confidence, definitely. I think these players look confident. They look like they think they're going to win. I can't remember the last time I saw an Arsenal team, and that's obviously not really like a tactical insight at all.
Yeah.
But I can't remember the last time I watched an Arsenal team and I thought that they felt like no matter what happens, they're going to win. But that's the feeling they definitely give me at the moment, that they're enjoying themselves. And maybe people don't want to think about that so much, or don't want to hear that, or haven't thought about that so much. This run started when Granit Xhaka became available again. And there is something about Granit Xhaka. You know, so many times we've talked about, or, you know, I'll listen to you and James, or the Arsenal Vision, or the regular Arsecast on a Friday. And the discussion for years now has been, but every coach likes him, so there must be something there. You know, and then people are so quick. I think he came back for the Everton game and he didn't have a great game. The whole team was poor. I think everyone can agree on that. Everton in that 2-1 defeat. And Xhaka was poor himself as well, definitely. And then straight away, everyone was like, oh, well, look, see, it doesn't change. It doesn't get better just because he's back. So what are we bothering with Xhaka again for? Well, it actually has gotten better. Xhaka's back. He's back finding Tierney on the left. He's back adding a little bit of grit that next to Thomas Partey, that obviously sometimes he steps the wrong side of that line. I think Thomas Partey sometimes, when Lokonga was next to him, it can look a little bit like he has to babysit. And I don't think he's that kind of guy. He's not an enforcer. I think he enjoys having Xhaka next to him, and he can just sort of play football and be a little bit more his sort of natural laid-back self.
He seems
more
to be
than
playing,
having to dominate games.
He seems to be playing a bit higher up, Xhaka, in the last couple of games. A bit further forward.
Right.
You know,
there was a moment in the second half yesterday.
He was at centre forward, basically.
He was up front, yeah. Like Lacazette had done this thing where he drops all the way deep into midfield, and Martinelli had gone somewhere else and instead of sort of taking Lacazette's place and making a run in behind. And we broke forward. I remember having Kieran Tierney had the ball on the left, and Granit Xhaka was the guy in the middle of the pitch occupying the centre backs. Yeah, I think that's very different. I think a lot of people's complaints to do with Xhaka last year or maybe just after Mikel Arteta arrived, and then especially last season, was this left-back kind of thing that people were seeing, where, you know, Kieran Tierney would move forward and then Granit Xhaka would go out to left-back almost, and you'd be like Thomas Partey on an island on his own in midfield. We're seeing a lot more, you know, I think if you looked at their sort of where they're having their touches and average positions and stuff, you'd see a Granit Xhaka the last few games a lot closer to Martin Odegaard than to sort of that left back position, obviously from on the other side of the pitch. And I think that's the sort of thing I mean when I say players moving into different spaces, and it doesn't look quite so mechanical.
Yeah.
I think we talked last year about this Mikel Arteta approach and how it was all so orchestrated, and it looked, you know, when it worked, it was great, but when it didn't, it was awful, and we just sort of got stuck in our own half, passing the ball around, and it felt like we were quite easy. We didn't have ideas to break teams down. We were quite easy to keep quiet. I remember at the time we said, well, I said, just playing devil's advocate a bit, I wonder if this is, if it's so strict because it's a bit of a straitjacket on the players, so they learn roughly where they're supposed to be in certain situations. And then if he'll just loosen the buckles a little bit on that straitjacket, and then they can move a little bit more freely. And that's what it feels like to me now. I don't know if he's told them, if that was an idea all along. And maybe it took him too long to do it or something like, I don't know, maybe he's just told them now to express themselves a little bit more because he hadn't figured out a way to unlock the attack.
I think it's an interesting point, because whatever else you want to say about Mikel Arteta, like, I don't mean this to sound critical, and I'm not saying that this isn't something that I wouldn't mind seeing, but, you know, as much as we want players feeling like they can go and express themselves on the pitch, and I think quite a few of them are doing that at the moment, but they all know where they're supposed to be, and they all know what their role is and what they're supposed to be doing. Like, I don't ever have the sense that Mikel Arteta's team talks are similar to Arsene Wenger, where he's basically telling them, just go out there and express yourself, you know, feel the game, whatever it might be. Clearly, there's exacting preparation. There is, you know, when this guy's here, you're supposed to be there, you know, working all these positions on the pitch. So if Granit Xhaka is playing a bit further forward now, and if he's being given more license to do that, it means that this is under instruction as well. It's not just Granit Xhaka saying, you know what, I think I'll be a bit more cavalier because I know my very precise manager is going to say, that's fine, you just ignore everything I've told you, you go and play wherever you want. That's not really how it works. But I wonder as well, is there something in the fact that Gabriel at the back is now settled, much more involved when it comes to possession and building up possession. Quite a lot of the time when Granit Xhaka was out this season, when he was out injured, the man with the most touches and the man with the most passes was Gabriel. He sort of took over that mantle in that sort of left half space, whatever you want to call it, where Xhaka would often drop in, take the ball and move it from there. We actually just had Gabriel doing that. So I wonder if, A, you've got Partey in there as well, but B, that sort of build-up that Mikel Arteta wants from that area of the pitch is something that Gabriel is capable of as well.
He looks more capable, doesn't he, than he did this time last year or when he came in last season, I think. And that, maybe Granit Xhaka doesn't have to make sure that that's being done now. And people laugh as well when Mikel Arteta talked about or has talked about the specificity that he wants from his players, you know. But that player can't play that way if he's not left-footed in that Gabriel left centre-back position, and the same with the right centre-back. If they aren't right-footed, they have to change the way they pass. They have to be in slightly different positions on the ball, or it takes an extra touch to move the ball onto the correct foot and things like that. And I think that, I think that also massively helps. We've got a bunch of players now who know their jobs, but also actually fit what Mikel Arteta wanted or wants in each position. That wasn't the case. And the turnover, that's something we've definitely talked about. The turnover the last 2 years has been crazy. The number of players who are playing now regularly that were nowhere near the team when he took over the side. You've got Lacazette and Xhaka, and is that it? Bukayo Saka was playing left back as a backup for Kieran Tierney at the time. And that's it. So, as fans, we obviously, it feels like time passes quite slowly and we want things to improve quite quickly. And, it's like, but if you need that specific centre-back and if you need that specific right-back that does that job in that precise way, what if it doesn't work out with the manager? And maybe it still won't work out with the manager as well. But he's, at the moment, you got to sort of say, maybe he had a point all along. And maybe, now that he has got those specific players, we can play that specific way and it is kind of working. What you said about the players, knowing their jobs reminded me, because I saw yesterday on Twitter during the game when, I think it was the second goal with the pass that Ødegaard plays to Kieran Tierney that people were talking about. And he'd obviously assisted the first goal as well. And it came up on my timeline, a quote from Arteta's first ever Arsenal press conference. I don't know if you've seen this, if you remember this, but obviously someone else who retweeted it. It's sort of seeing these players now move, all knowing where the other one is going to be. It feels like that's finally happened. He said in his first press conference, "Football is about habit and angles. It's much more simple for a player if you can process the image of where your teammate will be before receiving the ball. If I'm in the kitchen and I know the glasses are always in this cupboard, I will get my glass of water much
I remember
more
that now, yeah.
And if you'd have put that quote next to these 11 guys playing football for the first 18 months, I don't think most of the time that you would have put that manager with that football team. The last month or so, you actually finally would put those two together. And I think that's really, really encouraging.
Yeah, and look, we're seeing the benefit of I think, some consistency of selection, particularly at the back, which gives you a platform. It is encouraging. And what we did last night was encouraging. And I think one of the other things that maybe we could take a look at when you do have time for a tactics column is maybe this, the fact we're winning the ball more often in the opponent's half. And I think some of that against Leeds was just down to Leeds being absolutely terrible. But in the West Ham game, for example, I think I wrote on the blog about this, a couple of examples of Gabriel Martinelli, of how he stopped a couple of Leeds counter or West Ham counterattacks with really fast, quick pressing. It reminded me of that. Was it the Guardiola quote where he talks about, when you lose the ball, I want you to get it back in 6 seconds, whatever that is.
I think that was at some point a Guardiola thing. But also, Klopp and Rangnick as well.
That style of coaching was certainly attributed to Guardiola. But there were a couple of examples last night as well, not least for the second goal, when you look at where he started and where he won the ball on the right-hand side, like, he just chases down and wins possession, and we go from there. And when you get the opposition turned around, you know, you can exploit those spaces, and we've been doing that quite a bit better. And I remember talking to James about this on the Arscast Extra. It might have been after the Everton game, where we talked about, you know, the style where we sit back and where we look to build attacks from deep. And that requires a great deal more precision. It requires a great deal more energy. And it requires, you know, a lot more to go right when you're trying to get 80 yards up the pitch than when you're trying to get 40 yards between where you win the ball and the opposition penalty area or the opposition penalty box, you know? So yeah, that's been another interesting development in terms of how we're playing.
Yeah, and I think we haven't... It hasn't been a feature of our play so much. It's a bit weird because obviously Arteta spent all that time with Guardiola, and I think we all expected a little bit that we would try and, you know, really pin teams in, and that hasn't really happened. But I think much more interesting, like you say, there is, I don't think we are pinning teams in still, but we're reacting differently when we lose the ball, and that makes such a massive difference. It's another sort of quote, you know, that Klopp and his time at Dortmund, and something he took with him to Liverpool, was to say that that sort of counter pressing, the pressing straight after losing possession, is the best playmaker. And the best way to create chances, the most reliable way to create chances. You don't need to rely on someone spotting a pass or playing the pass perfectly. If you win the ball when the opposition has just won the ball, that's when they're least prepared to defend an attack. That's when they're least in position and least ready to have to switch on and chase back and get themselves into a nice tight shape again. So you win the ball and you attack straight away. And I mean, Gabriel Martinelli in particular is built for that. I think Martin Odegaard is really, really good at that as well. And for, you know, for maybe you can make fun of, and a lot of people do, and I myself included, of Alexandre Lacazette and the, you know, he's always blowing after half an hour. But he is another player who loses the ball, or we lose the ball, and he's constantly looking to win it back immediately. It's a strange one that I think Arsenal have been or have played, and I think that is from Mikel Arteta. I think we've been playing in a way where we lose the ball and then we're just worried about it not coming into our half or not coming into our half before we get behind it again. And now it does look like a switch has been flicked, and we're more interested in winning it back as quickly as possible. And yeah, to have a football team again, or for the first time in a while anyway, that looks like it constantly wants to have the ball, and they're upset when they don't have it because they want to just win it back, is massive. And we don't, you know, we don't press much. We haven't under Mikel Arteta ever, but it does feel like that's starting to increase a little bit, especially in that sort of opposing half of the field. So hopefully that's the start of something and not just, you know, a little spur of the moment thing.
Okay, finally for today, and I realise that we, you know, we haven't really gone into any specifics with regards to the Norwich game, so I will save that for the Arscast Extra with James, which is recording tomorrow at some point. I don't really know what time yet. So rather than just sort of repeat ourselves on this one, I've enjoyed this more kind of broad conversation about what we're doing and how we're doing it. But it occurred to me that at halftime yesterday, like, I think Lacazette has come in and done really well. For the most part, I still find it I wish he would play a bit higher up at times. I wish he would just have a bit more of an outlet.
You don't want to see Granit Xhaka up front.
No, and it's not just because of that. I look, he's being diligent. He's doing a lot of work. I think he played 90 minutes last night because, you know, he probably wouldn't have played or wouldn't have started against Wolves. But, you know, that's a moot point now. He has done well. Nevertheless, there were some moments in yesterday's game where, you know, there was one where a miscontrol ended up with Partey getting booked. There was another miscontrol in the first half. There was a header that he really should have put on target but didn't. Took his penalty very well. So I'm not trying to take anything away from him, but at halftime, I thought to myself, you know, we've got Martinelli doing what he does. He's a threat. We've got Odegaard now really, really pulling the strings and oiling the engine from an attacking perspective. We've got Saka scoring, looking like a player who's got over the post-summer funk, you know, of the Euros and all that, all the stuff that he had to go through because of that. Emile Smith Rowe, I mean, it's absolutely absurd what he is doing, and he's not starting games. It's ridiculous. And what's really great about it is it's not really a big issue. I don't feel particularly exercised by it. I think what he's, you know, his time obviously will come and all the rest, but I like the way this squad feels, so that when Smith Rowe is doing what he's doing, you know, we're not there going, well, get him in the team straight away. It's quite hard to put him straight back in when the others are doing what they're doing. But striker is the next piece of the puzzle, isn't it? This is the next step forward for this football team. If we want to continue on this upward trajectory that I think we're on. I mean, we might talk at the end of January and feel an awful lot worse about things. I hope that's not the case. But, you know, when you think about where we need to go and what we need to do and how much more threat we need to possess to, you know, to win the Everton game, to win the Manchester United game, not just not lose them, but to win those games, a striker who scores with frequency, who can also do some of the stuff that Lacazette does, is, to me, it feels like the next little bit of the puzzle, and that's what we've got to do in the transfer market.
Yeah, I agree. I think Lacazette has played really well these last few weeks, but that's where there's the biggest space for improvement. I think if you looked at this team right now, everyone loves Kieran Tierney, everyone loves Ramsdale and Gabriel, and Ben White's played well for the most part since he came in. I think there's room for improvement there, but, you know, I think he's still a young centre-back, and I hope that we'll see some improvement from him. And I don't think he's been bad anyway. Tomiyasu, Thomas Partey in midfield, the partner next to Partey, or if Partey's form doesn't improve the second half of the season, like, centre midfield still feels like a bit of a question mark to me. But the striker is the one who will win you games on a bad day that we don't have. And, you know, everyone else, three or four of those players might have bad days, and we don't have a striker that will drag us out of that mess. And obviously a striker doesn't always drag you out of that mess, even the very best in the world. But I find it hard to imagine Lacazette sort of ever doing it, or maybe like once a season, and Aubameyang the same, at least nowadays, both of them in their 30s. It's maybe once a season they might have some ridiculous performance and sort of drag the rest of the team with them if everyone else or others are underperforming.
Mm.
If there was a player that could, and if we can find a player that can drop into midfield, link the play, you know, play nice passes, take a little bit of pressure off, drag defenders with them, but then can also has that hunger and drive, and but also the physical ability to then drive into the box as well. And there was one, you mentioned a few moments, there was one that stuck in my head from yesterday where Kieran Tierney had pulled the ball back and Lacazette was, it felt like he was running onto it, and then he just sort of stopped, and then I think the ball was ahead of him, but then it was behind Odegaard, and he sort of looked at Odegaard hoping that he would take it and shoot, but it was sort of in between them, and just thought you would expect your striker to not let that ball go in case the guy behind him is in a better position, but like you're in the middle of the box, the ball's been cut back, bust a gut and throw yourself at it to get something on it and get it on target. I don't think Lacazette anymore, maybe, I don't know if he ever did, but I definitely don't have the feeling anymore that he sort of lives to score goals. And yeah, a striker that can join in and drop in and play football and drift out wide and do all of that stuff, but then also be a presence in the box, in the 6-yard box, and be absolutely desperate to get onto the end of things, would, I mean, take us to a whole nother, that's the position, that's the player. If we can find that, that would take us or could take us to some whole other level of football, I think.
Okay, well, listen, good luck to Edu and to Mikel Arteta and to our various scouts. Do we have any scouts? I think we got some scouts back. We did some scouting and scouted some scouts.
How
to come in and be scouts.
Be?
Yeah, exactly. You know, just look at this guy, scores goals, does this. Yeah, it's easy. Just put it all into like a supercomputer.
Arsene Wenger used to find one every 6 months. Just phone him.
Maybe that's the role for Arsene Wenger. When Mikel Arteta talks about how he wants him back at the club, he just wants him to, you know, find a striker. Recommend me a couple of good strikers. Not Shamak. We don't want Shamak Arsene Wenger. We want Eduardo Arsene Wenger. That one.
Yeah, or like Van Persie or Adebayo without any attitude problems. How hard can it be?
Exactly. It's simple. So look, let's hope they can do that. Whether they do it in January or whenever, we'll have to wait and see. There's a lot still up in the air with everything else that's going on. But we will hopefully be active in the transfer market in January. Mikel Arteta spoke about that. But look, maybe that's something we can talk about on the Extra tomorrow with James. For now, we'll leave it there. Lewis, I'll let you get back to your festive celebrations. So thank you very much for being here.
No, thank you, and happy new year. Are we speaking? Are we doing one before the Man City game?
Oh. Hmm. When is Man City is on Saturday, isn't it?
New Year's Day.
Which is Saturday. Should we do a little one on Friday? Do you have time?
Yeah. I'm not working or anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We'll find some time on Friday. I was planning some golf on Friday, but we'll see. Yeah, we'll see what the story is. We will do our best for you guys here on Patreon to give you another podcast. Join myself and James for more in-depth, specific discussion about the Norwich game and the performances and the goals and some of the players involved in that. We will have that for you as always tomorrow. But for now, we will leave it there and we will catch you on the next one. Take it easy.